The Day of the Battle of Fal. The Fal System. I was with Kallio Lezek when it began. The old astropath had been teetering on the edge of death ever since the psychic onslaught had washed through the Fal system. Barely conscious, he could do little more than mutter a few words of greeting. Each day that I visited him, he was weaker, a step closer to death and further away from life. He often slept, his acolytes wiping mucus from his lips as he twitched in the grip of dreams. I'm not sure why I visited. Perhaps it was guilt, or maybe because he was the only person on the tribune who did not look to me for purpose and strength. On that day, Lezek had not woken, and I had been about to go when his hand gripped my arm. I looked at him. His mouth was moving, cracked lips trying to form words. I leant forwards, dipping my ear close to the old astropath's mouth. His lips moved, but I could hear nothing. I leant closer. Lezek took a breath that rocked his entire body, but when he spoke, it was in a whisper that only I heard.
"They are coming."
He went still and collapsed back onto his pallet. I straightened. I knew what it meant. The bow wave of ships approaching through the warp presses on the minds of psychers. They can feel a large ship or fleet draw close, like lightning rods sparking before a storm breaks. A dead ice feeling had numbed my body. My thoughts felt sluggish as I turned to the door. I had taken no more than one step when the sirens began to call. "She is a good ship," thought Pertinax. Only 3 decades had passed since Hammer of Terror's burnished hull had slipped the docks of Mars. Some amongst the Legion said that these Martian craft had a more aggressive temperament than those of Inwit, as if their character mirrored the more impatient age into which they were born. Pertinax never thought of his ship in such terms. To him she was as she was, and he knew her every quirk and strength. The bridge below him moved with order and precision. Servitors whispered to cogitators in clicking whispers. Human officers exchanged spoken orders, data slates and spools of parchment. Tech priests crouched in their bronze niches, silent until the machine heartbeat of the ship required their attention. The bridge was the mind of a warship, and the vessel it controlled was a battle barge. 8 kilometres long, crewed by thousands of serfs and servitors, its weapons could pound civilizations to dust. She carried 300 imperial fists, a might almost equal to that of her guns. Hammer of Terror was her given name, and like all of her kind, she had a single purpose: to dominate war amongst the stars. A warship was made as much of flesh and discipline as it was of metal. That truth pleased Pertinax. It was an appreciation he knew he shared with Fleet Master Pollux. Though a few amongst the senior captains and battlegroup commanders might chafe at Pollux's orders, Pertinax could not fault the Fleet Master. The fleet was vulnerable, and an attack was likely. In such a position, one needed to create a solid defence and conserve fighting strength. Pollux's deployment addressed all of these needs with a direct elegance. Pertinax had even favoured the younger fleet master with a nod of approval when he had seen the plans. The Retribution fleet formed a sphere close to the ocean world of Fal II. Each commander in the fleet led a battlegroup of smaller vessels. Every battlegroup moved on a precise, looped course. Together, the whole resembled a cage spun from the tails of comets. The Hammer of Terror and its battle group of 12 lighter ships were on the outer surface of the sphere formation, close to the system's edge. Close to the Hammer of Terror, the black sheet of stars bulged. Lilac and green light spread across the swelling distortion as cracks spread across the void. On the bridge of the Hammer of Terror, officers began to call alerts. A second later, alarms sounded from multiple areas. Pertinax took in the flow of information rolling across his augmented eyes and weighed the possibilities. Something was punching into reality from the warp. It could be an enemy, a friend, or something unknown. Until they knew which it was, all would receive the same greeting. He nodded once to himself and gave the order the ship had been waiting to hear. Battle readiness. The Hammer of Terror shuddered in sympathy with the words. As he felt the ship wake to full life, Pertinax could almost see the plasma flushing into the exchange ventricles deep in the battle barge's hull. The green glow of holoscreens and red of alert lights filled the bridge as meter-thick shields descended over the viewports. Pertinax knew his ship would be at full readiness in less than 10 seconds. Ready statuses were already coming in from the dozen strike cruisers, destroyers and frigates in his battle group. He looked towards a picked image of the system's edge in time to see the stars fracture. A hole opened in space. Ringed with lightning, its centre a sickening swirl of colour, it widened like a mouth opening to vomit. A vast iron arrowhead stabbed from the opening, dragging a vast crenellated hull behind it as it split the wound wider. It was a battle barge, slab-hulled and dull-armoured. Weapon batteries lined its sides and serrated its spine. Pertinax recognised the emerging ship. Her name was the Contrador. She was a capital ship of the Iron Warriors Legion. For a second his thoughts spun with confusion, his clarity failing at the sight of an old rival and ally. The Contrador fired. Detonation spread across the Hammer of Terror's bow. Its void shields held, energy coiling across their surface in oily ropes. On the bridge, Pertinax's voice was shaking with rage as he gave the order to return fire. The Hammer of Terror began to bring its own guns to bear. Around the Contrador, space bubbled like boiling tar as ship after ship burst into reality at the same moment. The first 100 Iron Warriors ships fired as one, and the Hammer of Terror became a brief, smeared sun. When I reached the bridge, the Hammer of Terror was already a spreading globe of gas and glowing debris. The warship's death filled the picked screens, burning in silence above the hundreds of servitors and crew that filled the cavernous space. The sight of it made me freeze for a second, my eyes locked on the image. I thought of Pertinax, captain of the Hammer of Terror, a warrior who had already fought in 100 campaigns by the time I became part of the Legion. I remembered his green, augmetic eyes watching me steadily, and the soft accent of Europa that had never left his voice. I shook my head, and the noise of the bridge washed over me. Officers were shouting at each other as servitors and machines spat out reams of data. Ralne was at my side, already calling orders to the serfs. I needed to get hold of the battle before it spun further beyond my grasp. But there was one fact missing I needed to know. "Who is the enemy?" I asked. Ralne half turned to me, the red lenses of his helmet briefly meeting my gaze as he spoke. "The Iron Warriors," he said, and turned back to issue a stream of rapid orders to the bridge officers. For a second I stood still, like a man with a bullet hole through him yet to fall. Then I nodded and snapped my helmet over my head. The hollow projection above spun, showing me battle group and enemy positions, Auspex readings and tactical data in growing clusters of glowing runes. Screeds of data from my helmet display overlaid the projection. Intership communication, links to the battle group commanders, the Legion contingent details from each ship. To a space marine not conditioned to process such levels of information, it would have been bewildering. To a normal human, it would have been overwhelming. I took a deep breath, felt the focused calm enforce itself through my body and mind. Training and conditioning blanked out every other instinct. I was the centre of a storm, a clear point of will and strength. "Bring us above the plane of attack," I called to Ralne. I felt the ship judder. The holographic projection blurred and flickered for a second. I glanced back to the raw data of the battle that floated in front of me. 4 minutes had passed since the Hammer of Terror had died. We had lost 10 ships. 30 were crippled. 46 had suffered severe damage. ordnance had degraded to 62% across the fleet. We were close to disaster. The Tribune was taking fire. I could read it in the flow of activity on the bridge, as if it were the movements of my own body. Shields were down across the forward batteries. Power had been diverted to bring them back up. Plasma reactors were straining to maintain output. Inbound enemy bombers. Batteries firing. Dorsal line accelerators approaching optimal fire angle. Turn at 30%. Course correction. I let out a slow breath and blanked out the details of the Tribune's situation. I was the fleet master. The Tribune was under Raoul's hand and was only one part of the battle. I focused on the information in front of me. The hololithic projection was a tangle of trajectories and amber engagement markers. The position was clear and chilling. The enemy fleet had penetrated a third of the way into our lines. Their formation resembled a jagged cone, the largest vessels set back from screens of escorts and heavy-hulled strike cruisers. It had punched into our fleet and was moving towards the centre of our spherical formation. To my eyes, it looked like a fanged worm eating to the core of a ripe fruit. It was methodically brutal in its ugly efficiency, so typical of the Iron Warriors. The Iron Warriors. Our enemies are the Iron Warriors. The thought was like a sliver of ice thrust into my guts, as if that fact had only just registered in my mind. They had scrambled their communications, but I recognized their ships. These were vessels we had fought beside, crewed by warriors I had bled with and called brothers. If the Iron Warriors were with Horus, then how many others might be as well? Could more have turned on the Imperium? Terror might have already fallen. The Imperium might already be no more. Our fleet might be the last fragment of loyalty surviving. The possibilities made my head swim, as if my mind was screaming after the dead Imperium as it vanished into an abyss. For a moment, I felt the old crack in my strength, the weakness that had nearly made me curl up and accept death on the ice of Inwit. I cannot fail now. I will not fail. My eyes flicked across the projected sphere, showing the battle, green and blue, smeared with red like leaking blood. The contingency plans I had made over the long months surfaced in my mind, aligned with the possibilities of the present. I could see it, a way not only of recovering, but fighting back. If we bleed, I thought, so will they. 36 companies of Imperial Fists died in those first moments, without seeing their enemy or firing a shot. They died running for assault boats, locked in the cockpits of Stormbirds and on the command decks of ships. They died without knowing the hand that killed them. Within seconds of the death of the Hammer of Terror, 12 of its sisters followed, consumed by Nova Shell explosions and torpedo spreads. The Grand Cruiser Sulla fired a single salvo before macroshell fire stripped its shields and its hull became molten slag. The 6 destroyers, clustered around it, ended in the explosion of its plasma reactor. The Crusader and Legate lasted scant seconds longer. They and their escorts took a trio of Vortex warheads and vanished into the hungering dark. 24 Grand Cruisers and battle barges made up the tip of the Iron Warriors' fleet. In close formation around the Contrador, they moved as one. They rammed through the debris of their kills, fire and molten metal smearing their prows. Turbo lasers, macro cannon, and plasma annihilators scoured the void around them. Bombers and assault craft swarmed through the void behind the warships, killing crippled craft with thousands of small explosions. Seen from a distance, the opening minutes of the battle would have been a scattering of bright flashes against blackness. Closer in, so that the planets of Fal loomed large, the view would have been of hundreds of gleaming shards moving in patterns and groups like swarming fireflies. It would still have been impossible to tell the difference between Iron Warriors and Imperial Fists, but after watching for a few minutes, patterns would have emerged. The first pattern was an empty sphere spun from the curving paths of golden ships. The second was a tapered wedge that grew longer and thicker as more ships pulled themselves from the warp. Where the two formations met, explosions flared brighter than the distant stars. The Imperial Fist's fleet fragmented under the attack. Flame-wreathed battle barges pulled back, trying to outpace the guns of the Iron Warriors. Heavy cruisers staggered their flight, first one taking fire, then the next, while faster strike cruisers tried to cover the heavier warships as they pulled away. As the Golden Fleet broke into pieces, the Iron Warriors continued to press forwards. Smaller ships crippled targets, and then larger ships delivered the killing blows. It was methodical and merciless, like a siege drill eating through rock. Directly in the path of the Iron Warriors, a lone battleship turned to meet its enemy. Forgotten Hands had made the Oath of Stone under the light of a sun far from Terra. It had been old before it served the Imperium, and it had aged in scars and honours since. Its guns blazed, filling the closing space between it and the enemy with fire. Its target was a grand cruiser that bore the name Stheno. The Iron Warrior's ship faltered, its void envelope peeling back as it pushed forwards through the storm of fire. Lance beams spat from the Oath of Stone, and suddenly the Stheno was burning, a glowing gouge running from its spade-shaped prow to its fins. The Oath of Stone surged forwards to finish its kill, but the Stheno was only one ship amongst a closing fist of iron. Three heavy cruisers fired. Energy crackled across the Oath of Stone's void shields as they burst like oily bubbles. Shells and missiles hammered into the old ship. Its armour cracked and glowed. Crenellated gun towers sheared off, scattering clouds of stone and metal in their wake. 100-metre armour plates flaked off its hull. Deep inside the hull, fire ran between compartments, suffocating those it did not burn. Trailing wreckage, the Oath of Stone continued to close and fire on the Stheno. For a moment, it seemed as if it would face down the might of an entire fleet and survive. Then a line of turbo-laser fire cut its engines in two. Building-sized thrusters fell away as explosions kindled in the wound. On its bridge, a human officer stood. Blood covered his face and chest. He looked at the armoured corpse of the ship's master. The Imperial Fist had died with his hand still gripping the arms of the command throne. The man nodded, as if to someone who was not there, and gave a single order to the surviving crew. With the last of its momentum and guttering engine's power, the Oath of Stone rammed the Stheno. It hit the grand cruiser in the belly, its prow ramming through the iron ship's spine. The Stheno shuddered, transfixed like a fish on a spear. Gas and fluid sprayed from its hull. For a moment the two spun on, locked together in death. Then the Oath of Stone's prow ripped free of the Stheno's hull and pulled the guts of the grand cruiser with it. Discarded and dying, the Stheno drifted on, turning end over end like a broken spear thrown at the night sky. The rest of the Iron Warrior's fleet did not even slow down. His master was staring at the lights of battle as Berossus approached. The Iron Blood had no viewports. There was no need for them, or so Berossus had heard Perturabo say. Why would you need to look at the void? War in space was a matter of calculation, sensors and firepower. That, or hacking your enemy apart in spaces so small, you could smell their blood. Windows onto the void were a weakness indulged for vanity. In spite of this sentiment, Berossus found his master on the deck of a launch bay, its blast doors open to the vacuum. A thin layer of frost covered the deck and walls and had crept up Perturabo's armour. Berossus knelt, his breath loud inside his helm. He was aware that being adjutant to the Primarch for this battle held danger as well as honour. He would never claim to understand the Lord of Iron, but he wondered if at that moment his master needed to see the reality of his fleet hammering the longed-for rebuke into the flesh of Dawn's sons. It was a triumph, but Berossus knew that his master had never been more dangerous than at that moment. He could feel it like a razor lying on his skin.
"Is the fleet fully deployed?"
Vox static laced Perturabo's voice.
"Forex says that the full deployment will be complete in 27 minutes.
Perturabo turned to look at Berossus, the green slot eyes of his helm glowing above the plough-shaped snout. Berossus swallowed, even though he knew that the estimate was precisely in line with Forex's previous calculations. Around the Iron Blood, hundreds of warships followed in close formation. Behind them, hundreds more pulled themselves from the warp to add to the Iron Warriors' fleet. Months ago, scout units had captured details of the Imperial Fist's fleet, each capturing a single snapshot of data and pushing it into the mind of the astropath slave to each machine. The Psyker's death screams had cut through the storms, carrying dream images of the Imperial Fist's fleet. They had used that data to plan, and that plan was a timetable for obliteration. Berossus knew that the battle was progressing as intended, but under his master's gaze, he wondered whether that was enough. Perturabo turned his back to the view. At a gesture, the blast doors began to shut over the fire-spattered vacuum.
"Tell Golg to push the vanguard harder. The rest of the fleet can finish what he leaves."
Berossus averted his gaze and knelt even lower as Perturabo spoke.
"Yes, Master."
"Scour the Imperial Fist signals. Find where Sigismund lurks."
Perturabo pulled his helmet off as the blast doors sealed and atmosphere hissed into the hold. Berossus glanced up and wished he had not.
"Yes, Master," said Berossus, his gaze again on the frost-sheened deck.
"He is to be found, not killed," rasped Perturabo. "His death is mine."
The killing continued with murderous rhythm. The ships at the front of the Iron Warrior's fleet had begun to split into groups to hunt smaller Imperial Fist ships. Behind them, fresh arrivals advanced in a tight block. These were the macro vessels, vast cliff-sided ships filled with battalions of Iron Warriors and thousands of slave troops. Beside them lurked the Hellburners, old system ships, orbital haulers and tugs. They had ridden through the warp on tethers behind the macro ships. Unstable plasma fuel and munitions filled each of the ramshackle craft. Their slave crews, lobotomized into blind obedience, drove the Hellburners into the throats of the Imperial Fist's guns. Many detonated before they reached their victims, but more did not. Chains of explosions formed glowing nebulae that hung in the void like lava clotting in water. The Imperial Fist's ships that emerged from these infernos were half-dead, their armour peeling from their superstructure, their weapons blind. The macro vessels poured boarding craft onto the crippled ships as they limped from the firestorm. The Imperial Fist's crews did not die swiftly. Swamped by thousands of slaves, they held until the Iron Warriors came to finish them in person. Dozens of ships died this way, gutted from within and left to drift, their insides filled with the dead of both sides. To the Iron Warriors, the process of victory had begun, and the only question was how long it would take to complete. The first sign that all was not as it seemed was a bright explosion on the trailing edge of the Iron Warriors' fleet. The Imperial Fist's cruiser Veritas and a destroyer wing cut towards their prey. Their target was a grand cruiser, a hulking brute named Calibos. The destroyers released a spread of fast-running torpedoes towards the Iron Warrior's ship as they closed. It tried to evade, but turned too slowly. Blisters of fire opened along its dark metal back. The destroyers accelerated past the injured ship. The Calibos listed drunkenly, its course veering as the rest of the fleet pulled away.
The Veritas struck an instant later, its dorsal cannons crumpling the Calabos's shields and punching through its carapace. Half dead, it tried to turn its prow towards its attacker. The Veritas raced past, broadsides raking the Iron Warrior's ship. The Grand Cruiser exploded in a shockwave of energy and atomized matter. As the Iron Warrior's fleet responded, the Veritas and its strike group was beyond its reach and turning for its next attack run. It was the first blow of many. It is a truth that to stand at the heart of a battle is to see it only through a narrow slit. You see the gross shift and swell of destruction, and the tide of battle submerges all the small moments of death and heroism. The deaths of thousands become only texture to a greater picture, details that you cannot look at, because if your attention slips, it might mean total defeat. Command breeds callousness. To say otherwise is ignorance. For me, the battle was a blur of decisions, of losses and victories rendered in impersonal information and abstract projections. I existed above the fray, a set of eyes that saw and a hand that remade what was seen. And what I saw was that we were winning. For a moment, the information almost overwhelmed me as my mind turned representation into raw reality. Silent flame stained the black void. Armored ships raked at each other with hot yellow claws. Void shields shimmered and burst. Nova cannon shells exploded like newborn stars. Attack craft spun and slid amongst the greater vessels like silver fish through black water. Iron and gold hulls glowed under converging lattices of energy, melted, split. Dead ships drifted, breaking apart into crumbs of flame-licked metal. Another ship exploded. Plasma expanded to a bright white sphere. Golden armor turned to liquid. A frigate spun like an injured bird, trailing flame. Lines of hot yellow fire found it and split it into glowing chunks. Gull-winged bombers converged on a storm-grey cruiser, warheads sliding from under their wings. Pinprick detonations flared across the cruiser's spine, carving off auger and sensor arrays. Blinded, it began to list. A strike cruiser roared towards a wide-nosed battleship, its shields slick with deflected fire. The battleship turned its flank to the strike cruiser, its gun ports like a murderer's eyes. The strike cruiser rolled, curved under the battleship's belly, and fired. Macro shells tore open layers of metal, spilling burning gas into cold space. A slab ship tried to turn its battered prow away from its attackers. A spread of graviton torpedoes hit it in its flank, burrowed deep and detonated. The ship shivered as competing forces pulled at its structure, breaking armor, cracking bulkheads. For a second it drifted on, quivering as its bones splintered and distorted. Then its spine broke, and it crumpled as if crushed in an invisible fist. It was what the months of planning had been for, the hundreds of hours of training. We were ready to resist an attack, but we were facing an enemy far greater than I had ever planned for. The Iron Warriors had taken losses, but their strength remained. If we had broken in the first moments, we would have died. If we tried to fight the Iron Warriors head-on, they would have slaughtered us. They knew our weaknesses, we theirs. They had hoped to find us unprepared, but we had not cracked after the first attack. Our defense had snapped back into place like the cogs of a clockwork mechanism. It was an unfixed fortress made of moving strike groups, fading resistance and punishing counterattacks. Slower battleships drew fire, pulling Iron Warriors' ships out of formation, while on the edge of the battlesphere, fast strike groups looped around and through the margins of the Iron Warriors' fleet. They struck again and again, crippling, destroying, trimming ships from the edge of the enemy fleet like fat carved from meat. As I saw our retribution unfold, I think I may have allowed myself a grim smile. The Halcyon dived through the battle storm. Its leaf-blade hull glowed with reflected light from explosions and weapons fire. The void was thick with debris and plasma clouds, tumbling together like blood and entrails sinking through water. The Halcyon fired as it dived, prow and dorsal weapons thrusting ahead of its path. Behind it, two of its sister ships followed, Unity and Truth. They were smaller, knife blades to the Halcyon's spear tip. They spun, their flank batteries spiraling a bright helix around them as they sliced through the Iron Warrior's fleet. This near to the core of the Iron Warrior's formation, the hulls of enemy ships were so close that the gunners could aim by sight. On the Halcyon's bridge, Tyre watched as his target grew in size on the pick screen. He preferred to see Void War this way, enhanced and filtered so that he could see how enemies moved, fought, and died. It made it real, as if projections and the cold clarity of tactical data robbed it of its visceral truth. His target was an Iron Warrior's battlecruiser, its hull studded with lance turrets, its prow an ugly wedge of scored metal. He knew its name, Dominator. Once, decades before, he had seen it break the Xenos lines above Kallax. Now he watched its shields flicker and vanish under his guns. The Halcyon's rage hammered into the Dominator's back. The Dominator turned and rolled like a sea leviathan trying to shake free a harpoon. "Increase firepower," said Tyre. "This is what the abstract projections lack," he thought. "They miss the connection with the enemy, the personal. They miss the point where you look into the eye of an old ally and ram the blade into their heart." The deck lurched under his feet. Red light washed his face as warning lights filled the bridge. They were taking fire, of course. There were a dozen Iron Warrior ships so close he felt he could reach out and touch them. The Halcyon and its escorts were relying on raw speed and aggression to keep them alive. "That and more than a little luck," Tyre thought, and smiled grimly to himself. Pollux had ordered Tyre and his battle group to strike into the centre of the Iron Warrior's fleet. They had lost two ships in three passes, but killed four times as many. "A fair exchange," thought Tyre, as he flicked his gaze to picked views of his two flanking strike cruisers. They looked like fire arrows falling through a forest, kindling an inferno as they flew. Proximity sirens began to blare. Tyre turned back to the image of the Dominator. It filled the screen at minimum magnification. He waited until the proximity alert was a desperate shrill and then nodded to the helmsman. The Halcyon rotated on its axis, swooping under the Dominator, its flank batteries firing. The belly of the Iron Warrior's ship split open in a string of explosions. The Unity and Truth followed close behind the Halcyon, hammering into the gaping gut wound in the Dominator's hull. It disintegrated, plasma from its ruptured heart burning it from within. The Halcyon arced away from its kill, engines clawing for speed as it aimed for the edge of the battle sphere. The Iron Warrior's battle barge came out of the surrounding swirl of battle. It fired as it came. Tyre felt the explosion shake the hull of the Halcyon. Clouds of flare static filled the picked screens. The Unity vanished in a spread of detonations. Tyre could see a shape, a huge shape, slowly resolving like a cliff coalescing from mist. 15 kilometres of cold iron and battle-blackened adamantium. Cooling trails of debris spilled from her flanks to drag in her wake. Her spine was a mountain range of gun fortresses and macro batteries. Tyre felt his skin go cold. He knew her, had seen her once long ago when she had been an ally. She was the oldest daughter of the ship forges of Olympia, a breaker of fleets and planets. Her name was Iron Blood, and only one being had ever been her master. The Iron Blood fired again, and the Truth followed its sister to fiery death. Static blinded Tyre's view. He was shouting for full speed before the pick screens cleared. Explosions chased their flight, shaking the Halcyon even as it outran the Iron Blood's fury.
"Get a signal to Fleet Master Pollux," shouted Tyre over the shrieking sirens. "Tell him the Iron Blood is amongst the enemy. Tell him Perturabo is here."
For a moment I could not believe the words I had spoken. The battle projections and floods of information faded. I do not know whether I felt awe or anger or elation at what I had decided. Then Tyre's voice reached me through a fog of static and distortion. "Brother," he said, and I could hear his shock through the obscuring white noise. I refocused, the nearby battle data snapping back into my awareness. Two more runes marking enemy ships vanished in front of my eyes. The Iron Warrior's fleet was pulling itself apart as it tried to engage us, and it bled at every turn. But that was not enough. Not enough for me. Not enough of my lost brothers. Not enough of a blood price for betrayal. "Yes, Captain Tyre," I said, my words reaching across the void on broken signal waves. "My orders stand. I put 50 ships under your command." A wash of white noise filled the pause. Tyre was thinking, judging whether to question or embrace my order. When he told me that Perturabo's flagship led the enemy fleet, I do not think he expected such a response. He was my brother, but he never truly knew me. "As you command, Fleet Master." I nodded once, as if he could see me, as if he stood next to me, rather than on the bridge of the Halcyon. "For Dorne and the Imperium, brother, your objective is the Iron Blood. Execute Perturabo."
Grinding silence and gloom filled the throne room. Harsh electrical light shone across the face of the Iron Warrior's Primarch. Across an oil-black screen, the battle played out in bare numbers and raw tactical code. His face was unmoving, impassive, but his eyes held a spark of emotion that made Barossus wary as he approached his master. As the Primarch's adjutant, he had an unrivaled view of unfolding events. The insight was not heartening. The Imperial fists had rallied and were inflicting casualties, significant casualties. The Iron Warriors still had greater numbers, but that margin was diminishing. Barossus would have said that the Imperial fists might even have the upper hand. He kept the thought to himself. The news he bore was worrying enough.
"Master," said Barossus, and knelt on the bare metal deck.
Perturabo turned his head slowly, his dark eyes fastening on Barossus's bowed head.
"Speak," he said, his voice a low rumble.
Barossus continued to kneel, his helm held under his arm, his silent chainsword placed carefully on the deck beside him. He swallowed.
"Master, we have identified the flagship of the enemy fleet."
He paused and ran his grey tongue across his lips.
"We have also identified the master of their fleet."
He chanced a look up, met the Primarch's obsidian gaze, and looked back to the floor.
"It is a captain of the lower orders. Alexis Pollux is his name. Sigismund does not command the fleet. As far as we can tell, he is not amongst them."
Barossus could hear only the rhythmic hiss of atmosphere exchanges and the rising beat of his twin hearts. The first blow hit Barossus in the chest. Armor plate and bone shattered. One of his hearts burst. The second blow hit him as he spun through the air. He hit the wall with crushing force, slid down, blood oozing out of cracked ceramite. His body flooded with pain suppressors, but he could feel his splintered bones cut into his flesh. Blood filled his lungs and throat. He tried to breathe. Red foam drooled from his mouth and over his broken jaw. He was a bag of mashed meat held into the shape of a man by ruined armor. Perturabo stood motionless at the foot of his throne, flecks of Barossus's blood bright on his gauntlets.
"Tell Golg to find this lesser captain that stands against us," said Perturabo. "Execute him and throw his corpse to the void."
At the edges of the room, ears heard and carried the order away. Perturabo turned and walked back to his iron throne. On the floor, Berossus' life seeped out of him into a slowly growing pool. They assembled in the teleport chamber. Static electricity ran over Tyre's Terminator armor, sparking between him and the metal skin of his brothers. Machines surrounded them, thrumming with restrained power. He could see tech priests moving amongst them, muttering their clicking language as they made adjustments. Parchment tapers fluttered in the charged atmosphere, focusing dishes, capacitor towers, and arrays of arcane instruments, all pointed in at Tyre and the squad that ringed him. They all wore Terminator armor, their bodies bloated by thick plates of plasteel, fiber bundle muscles, and adamantium exoskeletons. Out beyond the ring of machines, other squads clustered on teleporter plates that spread through the chamber in concentric rings. Terminator armor was rare, the product of high artifice in a few Mechanicum forges. Amongst the Retribution fleet, there were enough suits to clad 53 brothers. All of them stood in teleport chambers, waiting for Tyre's word. Beside Tyre, Sergeant Timor brought his thunder hammer to rest against the snout of his helm. Oath parchments feathered the hammer's haft. Tyre knew that inside his helm, Timor was speaking his oath of moment again. He felt a surge of pride. They were waiting to go into battle against another legion, against a Primarch. It was a battle none of them had ever thought they would fight, but there was no doubt or hesitancy amongst them. Pollux had ordered this strike against Perturabo. That had surprised Tyre. He had thought that his brother lacked the boldness for such a gambit. That this mission might be his last did not matter. That was the nature of war, and the Imperial Fists knew that death was often the price of victory. The Emperor had created them to embrace that truth. 60 seconds, Captain, said a voice in Tyre's ear. Tyre recognized the tones of one of the human bridge officers. The man's voice had a clipped edge. An indication of focus and strain, thought Tyre. It was to be expected. Outside the hull of the Halcyon, the inferno-kissed void fled past them. Flanked by a dozen strike cruisers, they were plunging into the heart of the battle sphere. In front of them, frigates and destroyers converged on target vessels close to the centre of the Iron Warriors' fleet. By now, they would already be engaging the enemy, wounding with Nova strikes, spreading drifts of torpedoes to find what targets they could. Tyre had little doubt that the destroyers would not survive. He had said as much to their commanders when he outlined the plan. None had questioned their orders. They all knew the value of what they attempted. If they could inflict enough damage, they would draw the iron blood into the engagement. After that, the second element would strike from below the axis of battle. 15 warships would attack the iron blood's escorts, killing where they could and drawing fire where they could not. Its attention engaged and its escorts crippled, the iron blood would be open for the Halcyon and its strike group. They would deliver the true payload, 1,300 Imperial Fists loaded into boarding torpedoes and stormbirds and waiting in teleport chambers. It was wasteful and brutal, but it had a chance of succeeding. It must have worked so far, thought Tyre. 30 seconds, said the voice again. Tyre blink-clicked an acknowledgement and opened a general communication channel to the rest of the strike force. Brothers, he said. Across the chamber, all movement ceased. His words would take longer to reach the squads on the other ships, but when they did, hush and stillness would spread through launch bays and crew compartments. He had not considered what he would say. All his life had been war. Every moment since he had left the hive sumps of Nord America had been training, fighting and pushing forward the bounds of the Imperium step by bloody step. He was not a man made to craft words, but they came to him then, as if something long wasted within him stirred to life. We are fighting a war. Not a war of conquest, not the war we were made to fight,
but a war for the oaths we made and the blood we shed to make the Imperium. We will never see the end of this war. But if by our deeds we can bring that end a step closer, if our deaths cost the enemy 100-fold, then the future will remember us. He paused, felt the electric charge thickening against his skin. The machines were keening. Arcs of garish light played over the platform. Tyr brought his bronze-headed mace up to his faceplate and closed his eyes. "To the glory of the Primarch and the Emperor," said Tyr. The machines howled. A rolling flash of sickly light filled his vision, and oblivion took him. The cry made me turn. Kallio Lezek lay on the white marble of the command platform in a pool of his green robes. The last time I had seen him, he had seemed on the edge of death, but somehow he had managed to walk to the bridge. I moved towards him, the projection of Tyr's attack on the Iron Blood momentarily forgotten behind me. The old man was shaking. Fresh blood ran from his eye sockets, repainting over brown stains. His lips were bright, wet red in a parchment-pale face. His silver-tipped cane rattled on the smooth marble as he tried to stand. He slipped and started to fall again, and I caught his arm as he fell. Lezek was feather-light, but I nearly dropped him as I touched him. It felt as if I had plunged my hand into hot acid. I blanked the feeling out and lifted him slowly to his feet. Deck officers and attendants were clustering around now. Behind me, the battle spun on, forgotten and unattended. "Master Lezek," I said. He did not reply. His body was shaking, fingers opening and closing. A thick red trickle ran down his chin. His lips were moving and a wheezing sound was coming from his mouth. "Master Lezek," I tried again. But he did not seem to know that I was there. "Kallio," I said, and his head turned.
"I can feel it reaching towards us," he gasped. "I can see it coming through the storm. Terror, it is burning."
He moaned and shivered.
"How can such..."
But the question died in his throat. His head arched back. I heard a crunch of bone. His mouth opened as if he was screaming, but he made no sound. White-hot pain filled my hand where I held his arm. He lifted off the floor, his flesh glowing from within as if his blood was on fire. He looked like a carcass suspended on a hook, arms and legs still twitching as they dangled. My grip broke, and the palm of my gauntlet was dark red with heat where I had held him. Ash fell from the old man, hair and silk charring and flaking from skin. A roaring sound spilled out of Lezek's mouth, like air sucking through a furnace grate. A booming, hollow voice came from the burning man, speaking the message that was killing him.
"Sons of Dawn, return to Terra. Return immediately. This is the will of Rogel Dorn, Praetorian of Terra."
Lezek's floating body shimmered as if I was seeing it through a heat haze. His head snapped up, his empty eyes fixed on me. For a second I thought that he was trying to tell me something, that he was trying to give me another message in that blind look. Then he spoke again.
"Return to Terra. This is the will of Rogel Dorn."
His lips blackened, and bright yellow flames poured out of his mouth and wreathed his head. His thin flesh blistered and boiled. For a second he was a black silhouette of a man at the center of an inferno. Then the shape collapsed into a heap of embers, and the flames vanished. My mouth was dry. Return to Terra? This is the will of Rogel Dorn. The words felt leaden, like chains fastening around my hands. I half heard the shouts of bridge officers and the mechanical sound of servitors moving to douse the remains of Kaliolezek that still smouldered at my feet. Word from Terra. Astropathic messages require careful interpretation to sift meaning from the mystery of their dreamlike content. It can take days, and even then not be clear. For a message to imprint so clearly and directly onto Lezek's mind, it must have held staggering power. We had waited months for a message, for any message. Now we had it, and it felt like a judgment of execution. I glanced back to the hollow projection where our fleet and the Iron Warriors met in battle. We were winning, I thought. We could deal a wound to the enemy so severe that the Iron Warriors might never recover. This is the will of Rogel Dorn. Withdrawal? Flight? The price would be terrible, and even then those that did survive would be running to find a storm's grave in the warp. A human surf officer moved towards me, saluted. It was one of the communication officers. Interface cables ran from the base of his skull to a sliding track on the roof above. His eyes were green-slit augmetics. I nodded an acknowledgement. "My lord," he said, and I could hear the edge of fear in his voice. "Reports from all fleet elements. Most of the astropaths are dead. A few live, barely. They all spoke the same message before they died." I looked down at the scorched patch of marble. "Yes, we received the same message. To punch through the warp storms and kill a fleet's worth of astropaths, the message must have been less ascending, more a tidal surge of psychic energy. No matter how it had reached us, the message was undeniable, its meaning not open to doubt." Has the war reached Terra already? The possibility filled my mind. What if the Iron Warriors were not the only new allies of Horus? What if Terra is falling and we are being called back as a last defense? I thought of Tyre, of the force I had committed to a bold strike and the 100 carefully balanced engagements spread across the battlesphere. The message was a blow more fatal, more carefully timed than any ambush. This battle would not end quickly. We could not continue and obey the urgency of the order. There was no neat way to unpick an engagement on such a scale. Withdrawal meant sacrifice. I remembered. A hand locked around mine, blood coating both. Helios's eyes looked back into mine out of the ice cold of the distant past. "Navigator Primus Bassus reports that a passage seems to have opened in the storms, though he is not sure it will last." The words chilled me. If we were to obey, we had to go while there was a chance of making it through the storms. I saw the abyss opening below my brother, waiting, silent and eternal. "This is the will of Rogel Dorn." I had a choice between loyalty and victory. Withdraw, and I committed us to a loss greater than anything our legion had suffered. "The will of Rogel Dorn." "Alexis," my brother had said in a voice so low that it was almost lost on the wind. He was always stronger than me. His hand opened in my memory, and the darkness reached up to swallow him. "Signal all fleet elements to withdraw and jump to the warp." I closed my eyes. The pain is how you know you are still alive. "We are returning to Terra." Tyre swept his mace down. The Iron Warrior managed to move at the last minute, and the blow hammered into his pauldron with a metallic thunderclap. Tyre could hear his own panting breath as he dropped his shoulder and rammed his weight forwards. The Iron Warrior stumbled. Tyre hit down and felt the shock of impact through his armor. He could smell his own sweat, a thick and heavy stink, inside his sealed battle plate. He hit twice more, heavy bludgeoning blows that left the Iron Warrior a bloody mound on the deck.
Beside him, Timor slammed his storm shield forwards into the gap. Explosive rounds burst against its surface. Tyre brought his bolter up and fired into the space he had opened. They were in a corridor of dull metal, barely wide enough for two of the Terminators to stand side by side. They had been fighting ever since they had materialized inside the Iron Blood. Heaving, grinding warfare, fought with point-blank shots and grunting melees. The Iron Warriors gave no ground. The Imperial Fists had the advantage of numbers, but they were broken into 100 small forces. As Tyre had expected, the inside of the ship was a labyrinth of defences, sentry guns, kill zones and barricades manned by Iron Warriors who fought with brutal skill. Tyre had intermittent contact with the rest of the Imperial Fists on the Iron Blood, but he estimated that he had lost half already. Despite these losses, they pressed forwards.
"Fire Wasp!"
shouted Timor. A bulky shape moved into view in front of them. Its curved armour plates were black with soot and striped with yellow chevrons. Blue pilot flames hissed at the tips of its weapon pods. A threat rune latched onto the machine, painting it angry red in Tyre's eye. The fire wasp made a sound like an animal hiss and washed the corridor with liquid flame. Tyre's helmet display dimmed, reducing his view to sunbright patches of light and black silhouettes. Targeting runes hazed and pulsed in his sight as the heat baffled his armor's sensors.
"Navara, clear the tunnel!" shouted Tyre.
Navara came forwards, the barrels of his weapon already spinning to life. It was a new pattern of weapon, retrofitted to a few Terminator suits from the larger type fitted to dreadnoughts. Assault cannon. The designation was not new, but never before had a weapon owned the title so completely. Navara moved past Tyre, fixed his stance, and levelled his weapon. The barrels keened as they rotated to a blur. The fire wasp came forward, spraying flame. Navara fired. The torrent of glowing rounds hit the fire wasp head on. Its armour distorted under the deluge, buckling and cracking like paper in rain. A round hit a fuel tank, and the corridor vanished in a fireball. Navara kept the trigger depressed, panning the weapon across the burning corridor. Shell casings piled at his feet. A sudden blast of static and garbled speech filled Tyre's helmet. Someone was trying to signal them from outside of the Iron Blood. He tried to latch on to the signal, but could hear only static.
"No matter," he thought. "There is only one way for us to go."
Navara's assault cannon spun to silence, its barrels glowing red. The corridor in front of them was clear.
"Forward,"
said Tyre, and they marched forward towards the Iron Blood's heart and towards Perturabo. When it came, the order to withdraw spread like poison through the Imperial Fist's fleet. The first to run were the smaller craft, the frigates, gunboats and strike cruisers. Alone, or in small squadrons, 130 of the proudest warships of the Imperium fled the sphere of battle. Every Imperial Fist on every ship knew what the Fleetmaster was doing and why. It was a judgment of who was most likely to survive. It was also a death sentence for those that remained. Behind the fleeing ships, their heavier cousins fired on the enemy with renewed fury. Rolling fire hit every Iron Warrior's ship within range, clouding their sensors with a haze of energy as munitions detonated against void shields. It worked for a while, until the first of the Imperial Fists dropped into the warp. For a moment, nothing changed. Then more of the fleeing ships vanished, and the Iron Warriors realized what was happening. They fell on the breaking Imperial Fists like starved jackals on wounded lions. A second wave of Imperial Fist's craft began to run for the system's edge and the warp's embrace. The Lacedaemon, the ship that had carried the first Imperial Fists beyond the Sol system, was the first to break away. Its captain, the obedient Iago, pushed his ship until its engines bled raw plasma. 12 Iron Warriors' ships ran him down, raking the Lacedaemon with constant fire. Its hull blasted to a twisted ruin. The Lacedaemon fired back on its killers until the last inch of its hull integrity gave out.
Of the rest of the second wave of retreat, a handful made it to clear space and jumped to the warp. Most followed the Lacedaemon to death. The Veritas began to fall. Scything blasts of fire cut its golden hull, slitting its skin open, spilling its guts into the planet's atmosphere. Its remaining engines fired, trying to pull it from the planet's grasp. Its killers fired again, shearing its engines from its body. It tumbled end over end as it surrendered to gravity, burning and shedding debris as it fell through the atmosphere. It hit the ocean of Fal II like a hot iron plunged into a pool. Steam spewed into the air, spreading into a white anvil head. It took 3 seconds for the seawater to reach the plasma reactor. The wreck exploded, and a wave of glowing energy chased the tsunami already ripping out from the impact. White steam and black smoke bloomed out, mingled, clouding the atmosphere of the world like a cataract forming over a blue eye. On the Contrador, Golg hissed as he watched the image of the Veritas's death. Its end was a fitting one for the sons of Rogel Dorn. But it was only a brief diversion, a kill of opportunity as he searched for his true target. He did not have to look far. There it was, standing defiant amidst a scattering of ships. Tribune, a name that carried so much of the arrogance and pretension of the Imperial Fists. His master had ordered him to kill the upstart commander of that ship who dared to stand against the Lord of Iron. He would do it, but there would be little satisfaction in the deed. The battle had become a slaughter. The Imperial Fists were running. Squadrons of ships tried to keep the Iron Warriors at bay while the others made for clear space and the possibility of escape. Freed of the pressure of attacks, the Iron Warriors fell on them. Every passing instant saw another ship die under Iron Warriors' guns. They simply hammered them into twisted metal and cooling slag. There was an abandon to it, a wasteful brutality that required no skill. But the Imperial Fists died just the same. Golg felt nothing. No victory of superiority. Just the bitter taste of blood from an enemy that had let himself die. This was supposed to be more than a massacre. It was supposed to be vindication, a proof of the lie of old pretensions and rivalry. Instead, it had become simple butchery. Golg wondered if the Primarch saw it in the same way, if his bitter anger was as terrible as Golg suspected. Golg's eyes narrowed on the Tribune. This kill would be terrifyingly easy, but he had to be sure that he completed his task or risk his master's anger. "Close on the target," he whispered. Officers and servitors moved to obey. "Cripple it and prepare for boarding." He had 300 Iron Warriors on the Contrador alone, more than enough to bring Perturabo his prize. "I have killed us all." It was all I could think. The dying moments of thousands of my brothers clogged the hollow projection with blood-red light. I had tried to pick the battle apart, pulling elements back one at a time, diverting, covering, protecting. The Iron Warriors had felt the weakness and pressed their attack. The withdrawal had become an ugly, brawling battle, then a rout, then a slaughter. The enemy had hit the Tribune twice since the withdrawal had begun. Both had been substantial impacts. The bridge was a ruin. Half the human officers were dead. Fused cogitator units sparked and bled smoke. Air hissed from ragged punctures in the armoured shutters. Servitors hung from the cables linking them to their stations. Oil and blood poured from them onto the deck.
"Three close proximity targets," shouted Raln.
He was gripping the main ordnance dais, the body of its dead officer slumped at its side. "Fire on all targets," I said, my helmet amplifying my words over the sound of a dozen overlapping alarms. The ship shook, and shook again as we fired. I had given the order to withdraw, but I would not run until the last moment. The Tribune lay across the path of the onrushing Iron Warrior's fleet. Beside us were two grand cruisers, a trio of battle cruisers, and 20 strike vessels, a substantial force, but it was a paper fortress in the path of a storm.
Two targets hit, says Ralne, his voice loud but calm. Two more targets reaching close range. One reads as being of battle barge displacement.
Fire on damaged targets. I turned back to the projection of the battle. Blurring interference washed through it. I watched as some of our ships reached clear space and vanished into the warp. Too few. Far too few. Even as I watched, a mass of Iron Warrior's ships broke three of ours into glowing debris. A fourth turned to fight and died even as it fired. I looked to the bloated threat marker of the Iron Blood. Try and reach Captain Tyre again. There had been no word from Tyre since he launched his assault on the Iron Blood. The green-eyed signal officer was bleeding, half his face glossed in fresh blood, but he nodded and moved his fingers over his lectern.
Target hit, called Ralne. Fire inbound.
The ship shook again.
Shields gone.
We have a signal, Lord.
The signals officer was speaking into my ear via my helmet vox. A distortion-racked voice filled my ears.
Fleet master,
Tyre was shouting. I could hear a grating sound, like hail on a metal roof. It was the sound of gunfire ringing on his armour.
There is word from Terra. We are to return immediately.
I heard a chop of static and a sound like a hammer striking a cracked bell.
I have given the order to withdraw. Pull your forces back and...
To where? Pull back to where?
Laughter edged Tyre's voice. I looked at the battle projection, at the rune representing Halcyon trying to get clear of the centre of the Iron Warrior's fleet.
I am not retreating, brother. I am going forwards. I am going to kill our enemy.
He had always been headstrong, reckless even, and he had never liked me. I smiled at that moment.
Good luck, my friend, I said.
For a second, the only answer was the rain patter ringing of Tyre's armour.
And you, Alexis, he said,
and cut the link. I blinked. For a moment, looking into the memory of Helios's eyes as he prepared to let the abyss take him. The impact shook the Tribune and threw me to the floor. The armoured shutters blew in. Glass and metal spun through the bridge. Air howled from jagged holes in the hull. There were suddenly dead men and women everywhere, in pieces, bleeding in floods, gasping for vanishing air. My armour began to chime with atmosphere and pressure warnings.
Multiple hits, shouted Ralne, still somehow at his dais. Primary engines failing. Enemy battle barge on boarding trajectory.
Turn us to show our port flank to the enemy, I said as I got to my feet. Order Imperial Fist's elements into stormbirds and transport craft. Get them outside of the ship on the protected flank.
And you, Lord, said Ralne.
Tell the engine seers that we are coming to the machine decks.
The Contrador and Tribune met in an embrace of fire and punctured metal. The Tribune fired every remaining weapon at the closing Iron Warrior's ship. Macro shells, lance beams and plasma jets flicked across the narrowing distance and broke over the Contrador's shields. The return fire blew out the Tribune's gun decks and gouged a long wound in its side. The Contrador closed until it was drifting alongside the Tribune's wounded flank. Assault pods and boarding torpedoes slid across the gap. A weak flurry of turret fire reached out to meet the swarm of assault craft and hammered a handful into wreckage. The rest came on, unconcerned and undeterred. They hit in a wave, punching through gold-plated armour and disgorging their cargo into the guts of the Tribune. I saw none of this, but I felt each part in the dying trembles of my ship. The Iron Warriors were aboard the Tribune, hacking and bludgeoning their way deeper and deeper inside. The resistance was scattered but determined. Weapon servitors stood at junctions, filling the space in front of them with streams of bolter shells.
Our human crew stood their ground with shot cannons and las guns. Amongst them, a handful of my brother Imperial fists moved between the fiercest battles. That had been the hardest part, speaking to those who had to remain. All understood, both human and Imperial fist alike. The Iron Warriors had to think we were resisting and that they were crushing us to nothing. The Tribune was dead, but I was going to claim its death price. Ready? I said. Beside me, Raln hefted a tall shield of scarred plasteel and glanced around at the remaining brothers of my company.
Ready? He said.
I nodded and looked to the red-swathed figures of the Tribune's engine seers. They bowed their hooded heads in a synchronized gesture of assent. Thank you, I said, feeling the inadequacy of the words. The engine seers made no sign of having heard me. I nodded, locked my plough-fronted iron helm in place, and opened a communication channel. What remained of the Tribune's signal arrays would transmit my words to any of the fleet that still remained and could hear them. This is the fleet, Master. My voice sounded flat inside my helmet. The Tribune is lost. Remaining units withdraw and jump to Terra, as ordered. I paused, wanting to say more, but not knowing what to say. Endure, my brothers. No matter what, endure. I cut the fleet broadcast and let silence hold for a second before I spoke my last order to the Tribune's crew. Now, I said. On the external hull of the Tribune, 100 assault craft boosted into the void like a cloud of fireflies. The Tribune's contingent of Imperial fists leaving their fortress for the last time. The 30 members of my strike force were still beside me, waiting. I nodded to the engine seers. There was a flash of light, and the Tribune's teleport chamber vanished from around us. Precisely 5 seconds later, the engine seers performed their last duty. They never questioned my order, never showed the slightest doubt or emotion at what I asked of them. I think I have never had more admiration for a human than I have for them. The Tribune's plasma reactors overloaded. I never saw my ship die, but in my mind I still see it, as if the event burnt itself onto the retina of my dreams. For a second, the Tribune held its form, a golden fortress floating in black night. Then it detonated. The Imperial fists still on board were vaporized, and their Iron Warriors' enemies with them. Tongues of plasma licked out from the sun-hot core. Vast lumps of armor plating rode on the growing sphere of hot gases. The blast wave hit the Contrador and broke fields and burnt out its sensors and rangefinders. Our attack craft descended on it a moment later, like the vengeful spirits of the dead. The dreadnoughts were made of dull metal, their curved torso plates marked by burnished iron skulls. Black and yellow chevrons slashed across their greaves, and amber light burnt in their eyes. They stood to either side of iron doors, whose surfaces were mottled and pitted as if their slab faces had been hung while still hot from the furnace. Broken corpses and shell cases lay in heaps before them. This far into the iron blood, the resistance was not just punishing, it was crippling. Of the 1,300 Tyre had brought, less than 40 stood with him now. A few still fought in the rest of the vast ship, buying Tyre's force time. The rest were dead, their armour split, crushed or burned, their blood mingling with that of their enemies on the bare metal decks. But they were close, very close. There was supposed to be a second wave, a battalion of Imperial fists, dreadnoughts and Legio Cybernetica maniples. It should have lent strength to the final attack on Perturabo's inner sanctum. That second wave would never arrive. Tyre knew that Pollux would have withdrawn the ships carrying his reinforcements. Perhaps those ships would survive, but Tyre had his doubts. Withdrawal in the middle of a battle like this meant only one thing. a massacre. He understood Pollux's decision, but the cost was beyond imagining. Tyre was running, his mace held above his head. The first dreadnought fired when Tyre was 50 paces from the door. The cylinder of glowing energy missed Tyre by inches and hit Timor in mid-stride. There was a high-pitched whine, and the sergeant dissolved into an outline of bright light. The energy beam hit another Imperial fist and reduced him to dust. Tyre's helmet display blanked out completely. He could hear the shriek growing louder and louder. His display cut back in. The dreadnought was still firing, the conversion beamer's coils pulsing and sparking. Tyre focused on the dreadnought and selected his first strike. The second dreadnought raised one of its two hands and opened its palm. The graviton gun pulse hit Tyre and he slammed into the floor. He could feel metal distorting, servos and joints shearing under the pressure as his armor crushed him. The dreadnought, with the conversion beamer, kept firing while its brother moved forwards, its fingers flexing. A spray of glowing rounds hit it from the side. Tyre could hear the sound of Navara's assault cannon, even over the scream of the conversion beamer. Gouged pits spread across the dreadnought's sarcophagus. It turned into the deluge of fire, moving like a man leaning into a gale. Its faceplate buckled, the metal glowing hot under the impacts. The armor cracked, and suddenly the machine giant was leaking blood. Chunks of pulped meat showered from the dreadnought as it split open. The graviton hold on Tyre ended a second before the dreadnought hit the floor. Tyre was off the floor, running, his crushed muscles screaming, his armor grinding. The dreadnought with the conversion beamer turned to meet his charge. He brought the mace down on the conversion beamer's barrel. The ribbed focusing plates shattered. Arcs of energy cracked through the air. Tyre's second blow crashed into its right leg behind the knee joint. The dreadnought brought its fist around as it fell, clenched iron knuckles swinging at Tyre's head. He buried the head of the mace in the dreadnought's face. It collapsed with a sound of ringing steel and unwinding gears. Tyre stood, breathing hard. He looked up at the waiting doors. They looked like they could survive a kick from a titan. He turned to the remainder of his cadre. There were 14 brothers in Terminator armor, another 30 in void-hardened iron armor. Too few, he thought. Far too few. But was any number going to be enough to kill a Primarch? Melter charges, he called. Men began to run forwards, unfastening charges as they moved. The first one was level with Tyre when the doors began to open. Tyre turned, his eyes locked on the widening split in the rough iron. The doors peeled back into the walls with a sound like the inhalation of a metal god. He could feel the hairs rise on his neck. Something buried deep under his gene forging and training told him to step back from the dark opening, to run. Behind him, the rest of the Imperial fists had gone still. He could see inside now. He saw the figure clad in dulled battle plate sat upon the sharp angled iron throne, hand resting on the pommel of a hammer. Tyre could feel the black eyes of the enthroned figure looking back at him. He raised his mace. Behind him his brothers began to move. Bright lines of tracer fire split the gloom. Tyre began to charge as Perturabo rose from his throne to meet him. Chains spilled from the Primarch's layered warplate as he stood. Rounds sparked from the rivet-covered armor. His face was bare, his eyes oil-black. His hammer came up with him. Its haft was as tall as Tyre, and its black head crawled with power at its master's touch. Tyre was 5 paces away. He could feel his muscles bunching, his heartbeat slowing to a low-focused rhythm. Behind Tyre, his brothers followed, firing as they came, lighting his path, caging Perturabo in fire. Tyre gripped his mace with both hands as he swung it up above his head. "For Dorne!" The shout began as the coiled power of Tyre's strike unwound. The Primarch stood still, clad in iron and cloaked in detonations. Tyr met the black eyes and saw something move in their depths, like a lightning flash seen on a distant night horizon. Perturabo spun the head of the hammer low and brought it up in a curved arc. The blow hit Tyr as his last step fell. The hammer's head crumpled his armor and crushed it into the pulped remains of his flesh. Reality snapped into place around us with a roar of gunfire. We stood at the center of a wide chamber, lined with dull metal and lit by unshielded stab lamps. The residue of teleportation rose from our armor in gauzy coils of ghost vapor and steam. Our target was good. We were in a primary chamber close to the Contrador's bridge and main command sections. I had expected resistance, but had hoped that most of the Iron Warriors would have joined the assault on the Tribune. Its death should have claimed them all, leaving their own ship open to our counter-assault. Like so many battles in so many ages, it was assumption that almost destroyed us. Fire hit us from all sides. I heard the rolling explosion of bolt rounds impacting against armor. Three of my men died as shots found eye lenses and punched through helmet speaker grills. "Shields!" I shouted into the vox. My men brought their boarding shields together, their edges touching those of the men next to them. Together, we formed an unbroken circular wall of plasteel. Volley fire, disciplined and relentless, lashed against the shield wall. I switched to the optical feed from the front of my shield and saw the muzzle flare of bolters firing from loopholes in sloped metal barricades. Iron warriors dug in and waiting. Not all of them had gone to attack the Tribune. Even with the scent of the kill so close, the Iron Warriors were suspicious, methodical fighters, and had held some strength back. I looked to my left. Ralln stood close into my shoulder, firing his bolter through the gun slot in his shield. He paused and turned his helmet to look at me.
"This is not going to be easy," he said.
I almost smiled. "We need to move," I said. The enemy did not intend to kill us with this fire. They intended to pin us in place. If we stayed where we were, the Iron Warriors would wear us down and then bring up weapons that could break our shield wall. It was inevitable. It was what I would have done if I had been the Iron Warriors. Ralln glanced through his gun slot.
"Enemy barricades on this side are 3 meters high, with firing points every 2 meters. Crossfire will not diminish on approach."
He looked back at me.
"Advance on one barricade, remove it, and work sideways along the lines from there."
It was a simple plan, and under the circumstances, the only one open to us.
"They will be prepared for it," I said.
Ralln shrugged, a gesture that said everything about what we could do about that certainty. For a second, I thought of what must be happening in the rest of the Iron Warrior's ship. Our assault craft wave must have hit by now, and our brothers would be fighting for beachheads inside the ship's outer hull. I opened a channel to the rest of my personal strike force. "Close formation. Advance to starboard barricade." They needed no other instruction. Our formation reformed as we charged, shields rising and overlapping to form an armoured wedge that moved as a single body. The enemy fire intensified so that we were pushing against a wall of explosions, muscles and discipline straining for every step. We slowed, our synchronized paces becoming driving steps. I was grunting with the effort of holding my shield up against the hammering impacts of bolt rounds. Fire washed us, billowing through the chinks in our shield wall. I felt a stab of pain as the flames found the elbow joint of my shield arm. I discarded the sensation and forced my legs to push forwards. I could see the barricade only 3 paces away.
"Melters!" called Ralln.
I heard the shrieking whine as air superheated along the path of the melter beams. 2 ragged, glowing wounds opened in the Iron Warrior's barricade. The incoming fire slackened. This was the most dangerous moment, the moment when victory or slaughter was decided as much by luck as discipline. We charged, reforming into 2 spear-shaped packs that drove at the gaps in the barricades. I was at the tip of 1, shield raised, my power fist sweating arcs of lightning. An iron warrior met me as I stepped into the glowing breach. He was fast and skilled. His hand gripped the top of my shield and yanked it downwards as he stabbed at my face with his chain blade. I rammed my weight forwards. He stumbled, the teeth of his chain blade biting across the armor above my left eye. I moved the shield to the side and punched into the gap. The iron warrior's chest plate shattered. He started to fall, but I had already hit him twice more, crushing and pulping his face and gut. I stepped over his body. Behind me, my brothers came through the breach, firing to either side, spreading down the line like water pouring through a broken dam. I turned, looking for the knots of resistance. That small movement, the slight turn and drop of my head, saved my life. The teeth of the chain fist carved across the top of my shield in a streak of red sparks. I started to turn, caught a glimpse of a shape, its bare metal armor bloated by augmetics. A kick stamped into my shield. The impact shot up my arm. I felt muscles tear in my shoulder. I was still staggering when the chain fist carved my shield and arm in two. I felt no pain. Just a sensation of draining to the floor, as shock flooded through me. Bright supernovas of light blossomed in front of my eyes. A tremble ran through me as my gene-forged physiology fought against the trauma. My vision swam. Something moved close to me, a simian shape of oiled metal that moved with a splutter of pneumatic hisses. I could hear a shriek of revving chain teeth. The shape lunged. The chain teeth hit the field of my power fist. I did not even realize I had blocked the blow. My vision snapped into focus. The clang of arms and the roar of bolter fire filled the space behind the barricade. Around me, my brothers surged against figures in armor the color of bare steel. Bolters fired at point-blank range, shields battered into limbs and helmets. A dark gloss layer of blood covered the deck. The turning chain teeth were inches from my face. My muscles and armor fought to hold it back. My enemy pressed the chain fist forwards. He was strong, monstrously strong. I could see the grey, pale skin of his face sunken into the collar of his armour. Pistons and cables bulged from his joints, and dirty fumes coughed from the vents on his back. His eyes were pale, the pupils black pinpricks in irisless whites. A fragment of memory gave me his name. Gold! He had ordered the murder of my ship, but had stayed on his own, not even coming to finish the deed himself. He raked his chain fist back, and I hammered forwards with a backhanded blow. He took a half step back, the delicacy of the movement at odds with his bulk. The blow passed a hand's width from his face, and as my momentum sent my arm wide, he brought his chain fist across my chest. Thick blood and yellow armor fragments sprayed from the teeth. I felt their hooked points part the metal of my breastplate and open my flesh to the bone. Blood washed down my chest. I could taste it in my mouth. My breath bubbled thick in my throat. Golg gave a smile of relish. I stumbled back a step. Blood still flowed from the chewed stump of my left arm. I could feel the double beat of my heart booming in my chest. A high-pitched ringing filled my ears. Strength was draining from me. My vision was a frosted blur, as if ice covered my eyes. The world turned dark and warm. The pain faded. The pain is how you know you are still alive. I grasped the pain, and it pulled me back into the moment with a silent howl. Agony ran through my nerves, fresh, bright, alive. I could see. Golg was looking at me with emptiness in his pale eyes. The chain fist descended towards me, its blood-wetted teeth a pink metal blur. I brought my power fist up, palm and fingers open. I caught the chain fist and closed my hand with a crack of thunder. Shattered metal teeth spun through the air. I wrenched my fist back, pulling Golg forwards. His face met my helmet with a wet crack of bone. I let go of his ruined chain fist and pistoned my fist into his head. His skull vanished in a spray of red pulp. He collapsed to the ground and lay still. My knees hit the deck, but I did not feel it. Around me, my brothers were pressing forwards, clearing the barricade spaces. Blood pulsed slowly from my chest and the severed meat of my left arm. There was a warm, copper taste in my mouth. For a moment I knelt, a crimson warrior coated in my own blood and the blood of my enemies. Then the pain faded, and the waiting abyss opened beneath me. The killing began to slow. The Retribution fleet was no more. Only the crippled and dead remained. The Iron Warriors' ships had stopped firing on their victims, as if the overwhelming firepower of the earlier battle had left them spent. Surrounded Imperial Fist's remnants fired all they had into the face of their enemies. Some managed to strip the void shields off an Iron Warrior's ship. Some even put wounds into their hulls. But the Iron Warriors came on, shrugging off damage like a bull grox trampling a dog into the dirt. They swarmed their remaining enemies, their boarding pods clustering on golden hulls like ticks feeding on cattle. Their boarding parties struck plasma reactors, shutting them down and letting the ships choke to death without power. Life support systems, artificial gravity and weapon systems went silent. Then the Iron Warriors left, and the cold of the void reached into the lightless hulls to do its slow and silent work. A few Imperial Fist ships remained, fighting to the last, a shrinking cluster of resistance that became smaller by the second. They fought to the death, firing on enemies with undimmed fury, covering limping comrades even as the Iron Warriors brought them down. When the Tribune exploded, amongst the last Imperial Fist ships, few of the Iron Warriors took note. Golg and the Contrador had their kill, and the Primarch had the head of the Imperial Fist who had dared to stand against him. That the Contrador lingered at the sight of its victory drew no suspicion. In the navigation cupola of the Contrador, Navigator Primus Bassus shifted against the unfamiliar hardness of the bare metal chair. The Imperial Fists had locked the previous navigator of the Contrador in the deep holds of the battle barge, but he could still feel her presence on the unadorned and functional equipment. Behind him, his two secondaries fidgeted in their seats. The journey from the Tribune had done nothing to settle their nerves, and they knew what awaited them once they were in the warp. A storm navigation was a terrifying thing. Even if the clear passage was still visible, they would have to rotate through shifts to avoid gaze fatigue, or worse. Bassus flicked a switch on the console and spoke to the air.
Sergeant Raun?
There was a pause, a clicking whir of white noise.
Yes, Navigator.
The sergeant's voice held none of its usual dry humour.
We are ready.
He paused, sucked air through his teeth.
Our destination is still the same?
Yes, Captain Pollux's orders still stand.
Bassus nodded to himself, closed his human eyes, and ran his hand over the aperture on his forehead.
Very well, Sergeant.
He cut the vox and turned to his secondaries. Their green-flecked amber eyes were a mirror of his own.
We make course for Terra, he said.
The Contrador's engines fired to full life, and it moved away from the debris of its battle with the Tribune. It bled as it moved, its wounds trailing gas and ribbons of burning plasma. Damaged inside and out, half its crew dead and its command seized by its enemies, it was a crippled warrior picking itself up from the battlefield. But it could still run.
By the time the rest of the Iron Warrior's fleet realized something was wrong, the Contrador was already beyond their range. Its engines breathed comet trails as it made for the edge of the foul system, deaf to the signals that followed its flight. The Iron Warriors pursued until the Contrador ripped a glowing hole in the star field and dived into the storms beyond. Perturabo watched the calculations of slaughter play across the screen. His gaze held no sign of pleasure or satisfaction. Nothing else moved in the throne room or the long chamber beyond the doors. The blood had already clotted to a sticky dark film on his armour. The broken bodies of Imperial fists lay on the floor around him, their yellow armour so crushed and distorted that they looked like chewed lumps of metal and offal. The Imperial Fist's fleet was gone. Some had managed to flee and jump to the warp, but most now drifted in the void, shattered and blackened. The force that had boarded the Iron Blood was dead to a man. There was no enemy left to fight. The battle data scrolling past Perturabo's eyes told of a sudden and total victory. It also spoke of the likely outcome before the Imperial Fist's suicidal withdrawal. Perturabo let the truth cycle past his eyes once more. The hammer blow reduced the screens to sparking wreckage, and the Lord of Iron stalked from the chamber in silence. In a corner, Navara's mangled body lay in a fold of shadow. His armour had mashed into his flesh, and his legs were gone below the knee joint. Inside the ruin of his helmet, Navara's eyelids trembled and snapped open.